Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 14, The Forest of Material Enjoyment, and I guess we're at text 37. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada. Although people may be enemies, in order to fulfill their desires again and again, they sometimes get married. Unfortunately, these marriages do not last very long, and the people involved is separated again by divorce or other means. Purport as stated previously, every conditioned soul has a propensity to cheat, even in marriage. Everywhere in this material world, one conditioned soul is envious of another. For the time being, people may remain friends, but eventually they become enemies again and they fight over money. Sometimes they marry and then separate by divorce or other means. On the whole, unity is never permanent. Due to the cheating propensity, both parties always remain envious. Even in Krishna consciousness, separation and enmity take place due to the prominence of material propensities. So the text again, although people may be enemies in order to fulfill their desires again and again, they sometimes get married. Unfortunately, these marriages do not last very long, and the people involved are separated again by divorce or other means. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutaye, Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane, Namaste Sarasvatundeve, Gauravani Pracharane, Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskadhyade Siddharane. The Bhagavad Gita Krishna says, Sattvam Rajas Tama Iti, Guna Prakriti Sambhava, Nivananti Mahabaho, Dehe Dehinam Avyayam. That the material nature consists of three modes, goodness, passion, ignorance. And when the conditioned soul comes in contact with these modes, he becomes conditioned by them. In other words, we're walking around in a body which is being manifested and being moved by the three modes of material nature. And they work according to certain laws. We may imagine something else is going on. A matter of fact, without such imagination, one cannot remain apart from Krishna consciousness. If one actually sees, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that nainam gunebhyas kartaram drashta eva nupashyati gunebhyas cha param veti madbhavam sodigachati. When we can see that there's nothing beyond these three modes in all activities, and that the Supreme Lord is transcendental to them, then you can admire spiritual nature. But somehow or another, people are thinking we can act in the modes of ignorance and passion, and the result will be goodness. And they're surprised that's not what happens. In other words, we can be ignorant of who we are, how the material nature works. We can act according to that, and we'll get enlightenment. The scientists, for instance, the biologists, they take, we'll probably use to ask the, what kind of work do you do, to his guests? And if they said biologists, probably would say poor frogs. They take the poor frogs and they torture them, or other animals, and they're expecting to find out what's good. And they're trying to figure out how we're going to find out what's good for us. Well, what you're doing is not good for you. It's not good for the animals. It's not good for anyone. Generally, especially poor animals, they use them to experiment for cosmetics to see what would happen. So this is all very inauspicious. The people who are buying the cosmetics, the poor animals who are being tortured, people are torturing them. One may make money from such an endeavor, and one will spend the money for more sinful activities, so that in one's next lifetime, one will become one of those animals that are being tortured. That's the laws of nature. But people are thinking, we're going to do this in the mode of ignorance, and the result was we're going to be happy in the mode of goodness. They're bad, and they're thinking we do bad things, we'll become good. No, you do bad things, you become bad. And people can't understand that. That's called, as Krishna says, adharmam dharma itiya, mandite tamasavritaha, sarvatam viparitamscha, buddhi saparta tamasi. They think that what you're not supposed to do, that's what they're supposed to do. And what you're supposed to do, they think that's what you're not supposed to do. And therefore they're always striving in the wrong direction. Just like in New Orleans one year they had Mardi Gras. And the devotees out of compassion, because Mardi Gras means a marathon of sinful activities. They cook animals, they roast animals on the street, illicit sex is normal, they're always intoxicated for 7 days during the festival, continuous marathon of intoxication. And so out of compassion, one year the devotees went out and did Harinam. And as soon as they went out and started to chant Hare Krishna, the police came and arrested them and charged them with disturbing the peace. So this is called striving in the wrong direction. Now, people are somewhat, there's some education, for instance, that maybe smoking is not good for you. Of course, the tobacco companies, they also have their own investigations, and their scientists discover that actually smoking is healthy. Just like they have this propaganda that drinking wine is actually good for you, good for your heart. And then as there's some objective study, they find out that the other study was wrong. Actually, it was obviously. But then people think, yeah, I'm drinking, I'm actually, it's healthy. In other words, unless there's some objective knowledge, people are just utilizing their so-called investigations, so-called intelligence, just to discover what they want to discover. They actually believe that they've discovered something because that's what they wanted to discover. And if something goes against, it's called the knowledge filter, if something goes against what they want to find out, then they reject it. In science, as Drudhakarma points out, sometimes they dig into the earth and they find things which, according to their method of dating, is sometimes over 1 billion years old. So what do they do with this new information? They throw it out. It doesn't fit the old information. They must be wrong. And if someone persists, as there are cases in South America where they've discovered ancient bones and of civilized people, and they've persisted, the archaeologists, in presenting the evidence, well, then they just fire them. Or they just deny them. They can't print any excerpts from their findings. They just vanish into oblivion. It's like, probably gives the example, Mr. Patel was walking and his friends decided to play a trick on him. So they went up to Mr. Patel, met one of his friends and said, hey, how are you doing? And he just said, oh, Mr. Patel, what happened to you? You've become a ghost. So Mr. Patel was thinking, what's going on here? He must be playing a joke on me. So he met his next friend and says, oh, Mr. Patel, what happened to you? You became a ghost. And 4 or 5 friends he meets like that, and they're all going, Mr. Patel, you've become a ghost. What happened? And he starts thinking, oh, I've become a ghost. So they just make people into ghosts. You're not here anymore. You don't exist. Your findings are irrelevant. They have no meaning. They have no place in our science. And therefore, their findings just disappear into oblivion. So similarly, this knowledge is there, and people can see it. When I grew up in my neighborhood, no one had any idea that their parents could possibly get divorced. There was no such thing as divorce, or even separation. But nowadays, they're asking each other, how long have you been married? Oh, I've been married 3 years. So long. How long is this marriage going to last? So long. Aren't you tired of it? Well, we have 3 kids. Oh, it's all right. You know, they can find out what to do. They need some streetwise education. There's like one mother. This is a true story. Two devotees were married. They weren't married. They were living together for 20 years. They had 3 children. And the mother, and then the Madhuri, decided to get married. So she went to her mother, thinking that her mother would be very happy. Now they're finally going to get married. So the mother looked at the daughter very seriously and said, "Are you sure he's the right man?" So this is Kali Yuga. And it's only the beginning of Kali Yuga. Luckily, they're not eating the children yet. They're only killing them. Or they're not officially eating the children. So here it says it's the propensity to cheat. Of course, the material world is all cheating. We're telling you, everyone's saying, "I love you." There may be some affection there. It may apparently be affection. But it's actually, according to the Bhagavatam, it's all meant for one's, ultimately for one's selfish desire. Selfish not in the sense that means selfish. Everyone's here trying to survive. Survive means we want this body to live, which is normal. No one crosses the street without looking both ways, hoping that the car will hit them. Everyone is looking both ways before they cross the street because we want to survive. And all our endeavors here are meant for survival. So generally, Pariksit Maharaj, in the Bhagavatam, he asks Shukadeva Goswami, "What's the duty of a person who's about to die?" But no one ever asked that. If you ask that question in a university, immediately, people will duck underneath their desks. They'll call 9/11. The SWAT team will come and take you away. What did he utter when he said that word? Did he utter Allah Akbar and say, "What's the duty of a person who's about to die?" So people are thinking like that. How can anyone ask such a question in a public domain? It must be very morose. But that's the actual one thing everyone has in common, is that sooner or later, and generally from the point of view of eternity, much sooner than we think, everyone's going to have to leave this body. So what's our duty now that we're going to leave the body? Instead, what does Shukadeva Goswami say to Pariksit Maharaj? What are they inquiring about? If they don't inquire about that, he says, "Shrota Vyadhi Jindra Jandra Srinam Shanti Sahasra Shaha Atmatam Samatam Pumsam Shrota Vyadishu Yakparaha." That your question is actually glorious, he says, but in this human society, they have many, many questions. Shrota Vyadishu Rajendra Srinam Shanti Sahasrasha. Hundreds and thousands of questions. Atmavat Samatam Pumsam Shrota Vyadishu Yakparaha. They might make me mixing the verses up. Shrota Vyadishu Rajendra Srinam Shanti Sahasrasha. Pashatam Atmatatvam Griheshu Grihamedina. But they have no desire to ask about what's the duty of a person about to die. They're simply inquiring, where is the money? Where is the food? Where is the material enjoyment? That's what it's all about. They have hundreds and thousands of questions about that, and they're very anxious to get the answer. Where is the best place? They have books. Matter of fact, if you if you go on the internet, there's apps that tell you, you know, what's the nearest restaurant to where you are right now, so that you don't have to walk more than 10 feet to go to eat. And where is a place to sleep? There's so much information. Where is the best place to defend? How much money do you need in this place in order to survive? Etc. So people are very anxious to make sure all the possibilities of eating, sleeping, mating, defending are there. And if you have enough money, then you build your shelter in case there's a riot or there's a disaster. You have your luxury home 20 meters underneath the ground. You have your armory. You have your tank in case, you know, things really get bad. Hop into the tank with the family and ride over, shoot your way over to your hideout 20 meters underneath the ground and watch the chaos in television with your drone. So people are very anxious to get deeper and deeper into the survival. And that's what it's all about. Where is the food so I can survive? Where is the place to sleep so I can survive? How can I have my children so that they can help me survive? Where can I, you know, how much money do I need to survive? And what the survival is, nidriya niyate naktam, avavayena chavavayam, divya charate harajan, katumba bharne nava. So it's all about survival. Deha apatya kalatradishu atma sanyesh vasatsupi tesham pramato nidanam pashanapi napashati. They think my wife or my husband or my children or my paraphernalia, they're my soldiers and they'll protect me. But this is called pramada because no one is protected. Everyone dies anyhow. He may be the emperor of the whole universe, even Brahma. He has to leave his body, maybe later than us, but still, compared to eternal time, his life, Prabhupada writes, is just a flash in eternal time. So everyone's trying to survive, but no one survives. And the whole thing's wrong. So therefore, this whole idea that let's get married and I'll protect you, you'll protect me, I'll provide, I'll go out and work and get the money. Maybe it's the man, maybe it's the woman nowadays, maybe it's the children, maybe it's the dog, they hire the dog out. He's a guard dog, so they hire him out. Everyone else is eating and sleeping, the dog's working day and night. Anything's possible in Kali Yuga. They're no longer a burden. Because there's no idea of what the purpose of life is. Purpose of life is to enjoy the senses. And when someone can't enjoy the senses anymore, then it's mercy killing. Kill them because they're useless. They're just a burden. They're interfering with our sense enjoyment, so get rid of them. But of course they say, oh, I love you. It's like Stalin. Stalin is a very good example. Everyone knows Joseph Stalin. Not personally, but you've heard it. So Stalin, from what I understand, he decided he was going to declare war on the United States at one point. And his advisors didn't think it was a good idea, but if he told Stalin that something, one of his ideas wasn't good, then you weren't very good. And if you're not very good, then suddenly you found yourself in a very difficult situation. So, well, they decided that this wasn't a good idea to declare war on the United States. We got to get rid of Stalin. So they fed him rat poison. I guess his food wasn't very tasty. Didn't notice any difference. And at one point he lost consciousness and they thought he died. And his person, who was quite a nasty guy, I forget his name, he was the one who was like head of his security, he was liquidating so many people? Was that Beria? So he was quite happy. He was rejoicing, you know, now the guy's, he's dead. But then Stalin came back to life. And so Beria came down, oh, Stalin, are you right? And then he dropped down, and he, oh, great. So this is called cheating. You know, I love you. But actually, I love to exploit you. When I can't exploit you, you're useless. I get rid of you. So real feeling, real relationship has to be based upon dharmic principles, at least minimal dharmic principles, what to speak of Krishna consciousness. And if Krishna consciousness doesn't have dharmic principles, then how can it be Krishna conscious? How can we have Krishna consciousness without dharma, without Krishna's instructions? So we may pretend, as Prabhupada says here, that we're devotees and we're, you know, we're very serious devotees. We come once a year to the temple for Janmashtami, if we can. And our daily lives, you know, we have the deities there, but no one can see them. They're so much covered with dust, we can hardly even see them anymore. And we did change the water last year, so luckily they don't bother us too much. So we may pretend that we're devotees, and then we wonder why I got this television. The television was only to watch Krishna conscious videos, and everything that had the name of Krishna, you know, somehow or another, we dovetailed it in Krishna's service. First, we watched the movie Avatar on television because they had the word spiritual name. Then there was something else, and it was all related to Krishna. And now we watch television 3 hours a day, and somehow or another we're able to see how everything is related to Krishna. And of course, you know, these movies, you can't see everything on television. There's so many educational movies out there, and, you know, you can't always eat in the house. You got to go out to the restaurants, and, you know, you can't check everything that they serve you. It's too much, you know. And then after a while, and of course, you know, when we took our vows, we only really vowed to follow three regular principles, seriously. No meat, no fish, no eggs. How can you expect us to, you know, deny true love? Just find themselves in difficulty. You know, I try to exploit you, and you're not allowing me to exploit you anymore, but I'm trying to exploit you, but you're getting more from me than I can get from you, and I think we better find someone else to exploit. But what about the kids? Well, you know, they got to grow up sometime. But they're only 3 years old. It's all right. So in that way, even in so-called Krishna-conscious families, there is sometimes dissension and separation, whatever else. And as soon as there is some difficulty in Kali Yuga, there is no tolerance. People are less and less tolerant. And therefore, even on the slightest provocation, people become disturbed and angry. There's so many stories like that, and I'm sure we know about it. Some time ago in Texas, one man was stopped at a stoplight, and it's turned green. And the person behind him honked his horn, asking him to go, you know, to please move your car. It's green. So he became so disturbed that anyone had the nerve to honk their horn at him, he turned around with his shotgun and killed the person, the driver in back of him. So that's called intolerance. So this is Kali Yuga, and intolerant people are becoming less and less intolerant. If there is a 5-minute delay in something, they're waiting on a line, there's some delay, people can't tolerate. In India, you know, if you come 2 hours late, it's expected to some meaning. We're supposed to meet at 9 o'clock. You come at 11 o'clock, no one's disturbed. They're wondering why you came so early. But in Western society, you know, you're 5 minutes late, everyone's watching their clock, you know, what's wrong? Then you come, hey, look at my clock, you came 5 minutes late. You rascal, what were you doing anyhow? So this is Kali Yuga, people are saying there's love, you gotta love everyone, but when it comes to actually tolerating and love themselves, that they can't do. They want everyone else to love them, but they can't tolerate anyone else. They want to be understood. People don't understand them, but they don't understand anyone else. They want to be tolerated, but they can't tolerate anyone else. So this is Kali Yuga. That's why it's called cheating, the cheating propensity. And it's all due to lack of actual spiritual understanding, that we're eternal souls. There's a God. We actually have duties to perform with this present mind and senses. We can't act whimsically just dictated by our mind and senses and think that the outcome is going to be auspicious. This is called Kaitava Dharma. I'm acting and even following religious principles, but the idea is just to enhance my sense gratification. And all I'm doing is, at the same time, I'm denying the actual purpose of religiosity. I'm denying the spiritual aspect of my activities. And therefore, eventually, I'll even give up the so-called Dharma if it doesn't suit my purpose. Prabhupada says in that verse, Dharma Priyojita Kaitavot Paramo Nirmatsaranam Satam. People have rejected religion in this age because they think I don't need religion. Previously, we went to the church and we prayed, God, please give us our daily bread. As if God has a big factory in the spiritual world where they just make bread. And hopefully there's some variety to the bread. There's rye bread and sourdough bread and there's white bread and whole wheat bread. God's a big bread maker. So they pray to God, give me my daily bread. But now they don't have to pray to God because they can go to the bank. And they go to the bank, my dear bank, give me my yearly loan so I can get bread. So Prabhupada said, now that they think they can get everything they need from the bank, now there's no more churches on every corner. I grew up in a street near a street called Church Avenue. But gradually all the churches disappeared and they're replaced by banks. Because people go there and they pray. Please give me a loan. I'll follow all the regular principles according to my contract. I surrender to you. I'll work day and night in order to please you. So please give me a loan. So now people are thinking, we don't need God anymore. We don't need religious principles. Everything is coming from the bank. I just need those pieces of paper, and everything magically will be supplied by some mystic power. Whereas they think nowadays that milk comes from a carton in the store. They don't think they need cows anymore. They think that all they need is the store with a carton of milk and everything's all right. And then when everything gets bad, the scientists will manufacture food out of the nuts and bolts in the factory. They'll transform them magically. So this is all called illusion. And such people who are propagating such philosophy, they're also cheaters. Just one last story. When Prabhupada was talking to one professor at the university, professor of Hinduism, and Srirup Damodar Maharaj was there, and the professor of Hinduism at the university asked Srirup Prabhupada, can you give me a definition of what Hinduism means? So Prabhupada said, you're a professor of Hinduism, and you're asking me for a definition of Hinduism? So he turned to Srirup Damodar Maharaj, and said, Srirup Damodar Maharaj, he's a professor of Hinduism, and he's asking me for a definition of what Hinduism means. So Prabhupada said, what do you call that, Srup Damodar? Srup Damodar Maharaj, who's also a PhD in science, he said, Prabhupada, he's a cheater. He's a cheater, Prabhupada. He's a professor at a university. He's teaching a subject to people. He doesn't even know the meaning of the subject. Because we don't go, Prabhupada was an exalted personality, over 70 years old, and was, therefore we generally don't go up to universities and call people cheaters. But this is more or less, people don't know who they are, they don't know what the purpose of life is, they don't know how to achieve the purpose of life, they don't know what the reactions or the results of their activities are, and yet they're considered scientists and learned professors. So this is another type of cheating. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes. Well, it would be nice to follow the four regular principles. And the only way to follow the four regular principles is to engage ourselves in devotional service in this age. Getting some higher taste through associating with Krishna, specifically through chanting Hare Krishna, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, worshipping the deities, having a service attitude towards the devotees we're associating with, and trying to make the atmosphere spiritual, arrange things so the atmosphere becomes spiritual. Then if we get the higher taste, then we won't be anxious to get to experience the lower taste for happiness. And if we do that, if we follow, then we'll be able to follow the four regular principles, then therefore things will be fresh. The relationship will be fresh. But if we come down to the animal platform of life, simply involved in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, then it gets boring after some time. And if there's no higher purpose, then we'll give it up, looking for some new, fresher field of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Yes. Yeah, that's true.
So this is like their anxiety, I think, you could give a solution or something.
Well, the solution used to be there in the past. People used to grow their own food. Because they grew their own food, they weren't in anxiety about relying on others so much. They felt independent. And because they got the basic necessities of life and they understood that nice food and fresh air, nice relationships with people, was actually the basis of happiness, material happiness. Therefore, they weren't running after a new iPhone or a new computer or a new car, this, because they realized that these things are just dead material energy. We don't really need them. We actually need the real necessities of life, material life. And instead of striving to get these anarthas, these things are unwanted actually, they actually took their energies, they educated their children in the real principles of life, religious principles of life, practical things, how to actually live in society with the proper etiquette, the proper comportment. They actually got the necessities of life as easily as possible. They grew their own food. I think in America, even 50 years ago, or it's more, a little bit more than that, everyone had their own garden. Everyone was, people got healthy food, comparatively. Now in America, In many places, it's illegal to grow food in your garden. In the front, if you have a garden in your front yard, then the police will come and destroy it and arrest you. There was one man who was collecting rainwater on his property. He got arrested by the police. Collecting water. Anything else? Jai. Thank you very much. Grandhara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande Prabhu.